Hello and welcome to Money Talks with Lucan District Credit Union. My name is Paula Maguire and I'm delighted to be joined today again by John Miller, our in-house financial advisor. Hi John.
Hi Paula.
John was with us previously to discuss retirement planning and family protection, and we'd encourage you to have a listen to those episodes. They provide plenty of information. In this episode we're going to look at, John, business protection.
Yeah.
And why businesses should look at protecting themselves. And I think we're looking here at small businesses, maybe partnerships where there's two or three partners, and maybe a small business with a few employees. I suppose, first of all, why would they need to consider protecting themselves?
Yeah, well, I suppose for every business, there are different structures. You've got limited entities, you've got partnerships, or you've got a sole trader. And invariably, to be able to trade, they have to take out fire insurance on their building, employers and public liability. So that would be classed as general insurance, but that is something that they need.
Yes.
It's a requirement. But they don't tend to look at the loss of, or the financial impact on maybe a partner or a director of a company, or even as a sole trader, either dying or becoming seriously ill in the business, and how that affects the running of the business. So that's where the business protection come into the conversation. So where you have the likes of shareholders, typically maybe four companies, just to keep, or four directors, I suppose, keep it simple, and they each own 25% of the company.
Yes.
If one of those directors dies, or partner, it's how the family are compensated then. Does a family member come in and have, without any knowledge of the business and how to run it,
and start interfering in the running of it?
Are there funds in the company to be able to compensate the estate of the deceased partner or director? So the solution that we have is to put in what's called, there's shareholder protection for directors, and in the event of one of the directors dying, there's a lump sum payout to the company that enables them then to compensate the family.
So basically to buy out the interest of that partner.
Absolutely.
Or director. Yeah. So there would be an exposure there for, say, in that context, the other three partners.
Yeah.
Because suddenly 25% of their business is uncertain.
Yeah. And it's down to, there's scenarios where you could have a family member wanting to get involved in the business, become a director.
Yes.
Of the company, but the easiest and cleanest way is that if there's a sum of money there to be able to compensate the family and protect the other directors going
and
forward.
And effectively buy back that
25%. Absolutely, they buy back that
25%. So it just eliminates that uncertainty within the partnership.
Yeah.
Okay, but that's very important.
Like there would have to be like what's called a shareholder agreement in place.
Yes.
And then there would be life cover. Obviously, it would have to be medically underwritten, but then the policies are in force and it's legal binding. That's how it works, really.
Yeah. Well, that would make sense, you know, particularly if they're putting in all the other insurances.
Yeah.
And I think particularly for maybe a small practice or partnership of two or three people, it would be vital.
It's very important.
Yeah.
And as I said at this outset, not many companies or businesses look at that. You know,
yes,
they will look at their general insurance needs, but unfortunately not many will look at the financial impact a death of a director or a partner is on the business.
Yes. And there's another insurance there as well. There's a key person cover, I know. Is that similar or is that a different type of insurance?
So key person, it's similar because it's life cover.
Yes.
Or in the event of, which is different to the shareholder protection, would be, which is life cover only. But for a key person, so for instance, if you have a key person in the business, brings in revenue, say the top salesperson or the director or whatever, and they're key to the business and they drive profit basically, or there might be a loan guaranteed on that.
Yes.
Person for the business. The key person cover again would cover the likes of if that person died, untimely death.
Yes.
That it covers the gross profit or the profit that would have been coming to the company, and also then if there's any loans owing, it can be tailored to any outstanding loans, that the level of cover that's provided on that.
Yes. Basically, it's a life assurance policy.
Yeah.
That the company benefits from, or the partnership benefits from.
Yeah.
In the event that key person passes.
So, yeah. So it's a lump sum that's paid out in the event
of death. Seriously ill.
Yeah. Or seriously ill. So most serious illness people recover from now, but it's the impact it has maybe for the 6 months or a year that person is incapacitated, let's say. So it's future proof in the business in the event of something happening there.
Yes.
You know, because it could have a dent. You know, some business could go to the wall, you know. So again, it's just putting these structures
protection
in place and protections in place in the event. And that's what it is. It's in the event of something happening.
And when the company is looking at putting in the level of cover to replace that key person.
Yeah.
And again, the shareholder, should a shareholder pass?
Yeah.
It's really based on a calculation or an estimate of how much they feel they'd lose.
Yeah, so basically it can be, there's two ways it can be done. It's, one is on say, if there was loans owing. So it's based on the outstanding loans that are involved there. Or it can be based on what loss of profit would occur, you know, in the event of that happen.
So it is important that businesses consider that aspect of insuring themselves and protecting themselves.
Absolutely.
And to speak with their broker.
Yeah, and that's the first part of the call, you know, even to get recommendations on it. In some ways, the structure and how it's structured, it can be tax deductible from a company perspective. There are other structures as well, I won't get into now, but again, that's where if we sit down with the business owner or whatever, we can talk through them, the various structures that are available there. Like, company could take out the cover itself. The four directors could take out individual cover and be compensated for it. So again, it's vital that they speak to an advisor and get appropriate advice.
Yeah, so it just gives you that the business that certainty. Yeah.
It's peace of mind, Paula. Like, it is peace of mind in any insurance you take out, whether it be general or whatever. But for business owners, you know, out there, if they think what impact the death or the serious illness of a director or a partner would have on the business, they should consider engaging with a financial advisor to get some options, you know.
Okay, thanks, John. We'll just move on now to employee benefits because particularly in the current environment where the labour market is tight, employee benefits have become extremely important for businesses.
Mm-hmm.
And when we talk about employee benefits here, we're looking at pension schemes, death and service insurance, income protection and our permanent health insurance.
Yeah.
That would be the income
protection.
They'd
be the main ones, yeah.
And a lot of the bigger employers do offer this scheme and some of the smaller employers, but not everybody. Why should even a small employer consider putting benefits in place?
Yeah, well, I suppose they're looking out for their employees. There are some companies out there that simply don't provide any employee benefits. And it's very, very easy for the employees of that company to see elsewhere, maybe with a competitor or that look, XYZ company over the road are providing pension, they're providing me with income protection and also a death and service benefit which protects my family whilst I'm in service. So that's what employees are looking at now, really. Yeah. And it's really
so employee retention, really, retention. You're talking about there holding on to your good staff.
Yeah, you think about it, like you've probably trained somebody up over a 5 or 7 year period or whatever the case may be, and you put time and effort in kind of molding them into the culture of the company and so on and so forth, and then all of a sudden he jumps to another company purely on the basis that he's getting a better package, which includes these employee benefits. So the cost of retraining somebody and hiring somebody, and it can be quite intensive, you know, to get the right person in. So to try and retain a staff pension benefit is key. Building a fund of money, if they're staying with you to their retirement date, in some cases that could be 30, 40 years. And to have a fund of money there to replace their income when they do retire is so important. Like, I still to this day come across only recently a gentleman who had 40 years service and no pension. So he's put blood, sweat and tears into that company, and at the end of it, he's sitting on the state pension, you know.
That's it.
Yeah.
You know, if you were to move jobs, certainly that's the things you'd have to look at. Because if you're in a company that offers a good pension scheme, you have death and service, which is usually three or four times income.
Yeah.
And you have that permanent health insurance. If you're moving job, for example, you have to really think about that. Does that other company also?
Yeah.
The salary is one thing, but you also have to consider, will I get that death and service? Will I get that pension? And the other thing is, generally when you move over, you can't participate in those benefits until you've completed your 6 months probation.
That's right, yeah.
So you have that 6 month exposure there. So it's really important that particularly employees give that.
But in saying that as well, Paula, it used to be that the 6 months, and that still is the case.
Yes.
But I'm finding even more and more now, employers going, I really need to get this up and going now.
Yes.
You know, they're only going to come to me on the basis of it kicks in straight away.
Yes.
And that's happening out there as well, you know, to make sure they bring in the right staff.
Well, that's the sort of thing maybe bigger companies can look at because they'd have the budget for it.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, it might not be as easy for a small company to do that.
Well, you see, a lot of companies, again, this is where talking to an advisor is so important because, you know, a lot of businesses out there think, oh, the company are paying this for the employee and stuff. But it's tax deductible. Companies for their contributions into a pension, for instance, they get corporation tax relief on it.
Yeah, so it doesn't cost them as much as maybe they think
it would.
It's
a tax write-down, you know, out of the profits of the company. Yeah. The cost is minimal. It's reducing down the company's tax whilst providing the benefit to the employee and retaining
on.
Them and holding
on to them.
Holding
on to the employees, which is very important at the moment. Okay, so even if a company maybe has schemes in place and again, employees might be getting a better deal somewhere else.
Yeah.
They might have it in place for 10 or 15 years.
Yeah.
It's worthwhile getting somebody in to review that and make sure that they're still getting the best bang for their buck.
It's so important because there are all providers provide these group arrangements, i.e. the pension, the debt and service, and rates change, charging structures improve for the likes of pension funds. For the older contracts, it's so important because they could have a charging structure that could be improved if it was reviewed and sent around to different providers, and they're only too happy to provide.
It could actually save the money.
Yeah, and improve the benefits. Again, for the older contracts, you know, I've come across one recently where, for instance, on an income protection plan, you know, there was two state benefits deducted, you know, because the state will provide something in the event of illness. But the state aren't going to pay out two state benefits at that time. So we reviewed that and we were able to negotiate that only one state benefit was going to be. So there's an improvement on the benefit for that particular company, you know.
So the company itself would not have been aware that was in
place
until a broker actually came in and had a look at the scheme.
Puts their eyes over it, reviews the whole in its entirety, holistically, everything. It's only at that point then you kind of pick up on these covers that can be improved on.
Potentially saving money as well, which is great.
But
I suppose the key part of it is that having employee benefit schemes available does make your business an attractive place to work.
Yeah,
so
it does.
It's not, people are not just looking at salary. Maybe salary when you're very young is the be all and end all, but as you go through life, the employee benefits really become an important part.
Yeah, and that's so true. So, you know, for people at the different age demographics, I suppose I'd find a lot of people reaching their mid 40s, maybe into their 50s, where previously this wouldn't have been it wouldn't be high on their list of, you know, but as they're approaching or getting closer to retirement, it becomes an issue. And you can even see where, you know, there's one client I'm talking to at the moment who's looking to renegotiate his employment, so more money's going into his pension than the salary he takes because he's trying to catch up on his retirement funding.
Do you think employers are doing enough to encourage particularly younger members of staff to participate in the scheme? Because I know a lot of younger people say, oh, that's ages away, I don't need to be planning for my retirement yet, I'm not paying anything into it. Whereas it's cheaper for them in the long run to start saving into it now.
Yeah. So again, retirement funding is all about the funding first. That's the contributions going into it and the fund performance. Mm-hmm. Yes, there's charges associated, but they're the two main drivers of retirement, building a fund of money.
Yes.
But you'd have some companies out there as a tick box, oh, we'll put 1% or 2% of the employee's salary in. You know, the norm is 5%.
So basically, how a group employer scheme generally works is it's a match. So the employer might decide to put 5 or 6% in, and the employee matches that with 5 or 6% out of their salary before tax.
Yes. So how that works is, as I said earlier, the company would receive corporation tax relief on their contribution, on the employer contribution, but then the employee, based on revenue limits, and revenue set the rules on the percentage an employee can put in, and that increases with age.
Yes.
But they receive marginal tax relief. And what I mean by that is, if you're paying 20% tax, you're getting 20 euros back for every 100. If you're paying 40% tax, and that may be only on a small bit of your income, you will get 40% tax relief on all your contributions. So that's 40 euros for every 100 euro put into the pension.
And, you know, I think it's important to remind people that if you don't sign up to your company pension scheme your employer is not paying in that 5 or 6%, you're losing that money.
You're leaving,
so that's money on top of your salary.
You're leaving money. It's free money. You're leaving money on the table in that regard. It is a no-brainer. If they're offering a pension and they're willing to contribute, it's an absolute no-brainer. To sign up for it.
I actually like the way you put it in our previous podcast, John, that they're building their personal wealth.
Yeah.
So you're saving money in effect. So it is a cost. It is coming out of your pay. It comes out of your pay before tax.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So if you get paid 1,000 euro a month, just to keep it simple, you pay 200 a month yeah. into your pension scheme, you're only taxed on the
exactly.
800.
Yeah,
so it would cost you less than you think to yeah. actually make your payments.
It's called salary deduction. So it's at yeah. source that the yeah. deduction is made. For sole traders, they would have to, it would be done through their accounts at the end of the tax year. You know, they get yes. the tax relief at that point. So yes, it kind of leads on to the whole auto-enrollment part, well,
that was my next on the hit list. Yeah. I know we did touch on it in a previous podcast, John, but from the employer's perspective in this podcast, the pension auto-enrollment is potentially coming down the road this year, 2024.
Well, yeah, that has been the case in the thought process up until recently, and I only read an article the other day where it might be even pushed out a little bit further. But
yes.
It is coming in. It's welcomed by the industry because there's more people going to be covered for pension, I suppose. But the auto-enrollment will sit outside any kind of group pension arrangement or anything like that. There's no advice associated or can be provided on the auto-enrollment. So it's really a tick box for the government as well in many ways, where they're saying, well, for those employers that don't provide any pension or employee
yes.
benefits, we're going to now force you to auto-enroll those employees into this auto-enrollment pension structure. It's still not finalised, the final makeup of it. There is some
yes.
information on it. But on that, it is important that all business owners, be it limited, partnerships, whatever, they understand their options.
Yeah,
you know?
Is there any indication about how much an employer will be expected to put
again,
into that?
Yeah, they have been putting some percentages in, like 1.5% of salary. You know, you can see how that goes against the 5% you'd be doing in a group scheme. It's going to
yes.
be a gradual increase. As I said before, there's no advice provided in this. Simply the employer would pay into it, the employee would pay into it, and the government would pay into it. But when I was talking about the tax relief associated with like a group pension scheme and contributions going in there, i.e. the 20% or 40%, that's not going to apply to the auto-enrollment.
Okay.
So there's no tax relief on your contributions. Whereas the group arrangement has that, it's far
you'd be better off with the group
yeah.
arrangement.
Yeah.
And I suppose the other question is then, if an employer already has a small group scheme mm-hmm. in place available for employees,
yeah.
that would auto-enrollment wouldn't be...
No, it doesn't. Once the employer has an arrangement in place already, well, look, all employers are legally obliged to provide the facility
yes.
to deduct an employee's salary at source. They do not have to contribute at the moment.
Yeah,
all right.
It's called a PRSA.
That's again, I know I said it before, it's ticking a box for them. But when auto-enrollment comes in, that'll just mean the employer will be forced to contribute as well. And that's
yes.
why it's important to understand the option. Well, do I just run with the auto-enrollment, or would it be far better for my employees and my staff who help run my business to provide them with this group pension
yes.
arrangement or on the other benefits that go with that as well.
Yes, okay. So definitely worth, again, meeting with a financial
having a
provider.
Chat. Yeah.
And thinking, getting ahead of the curve, I suppose,
yeah.
here in advance of auto-enrollment
yeah.
being launched and getting this in place for your employees,
yeah.
albeit even at a low rate, but it's better to
have something there to start it up, and it can always be increased, decreased. We don't
yeah.
like being decreased now, but, you know, increased and...
Yeah.
Over time, but it's
that's
to have it in place.
Yeah, so it's you can put it in place now and review it
absolutely
regularly.
Yeah,
as I said early, you know,
yeah.
people should review their schemes.
Yeah, look, it's important that every year, well, you'd say every year, maybe some people might say every 3 years to review it, but it's so
yes.
important because providers change their rates, they change their products, they pay charging structure. I recently looked at an old kind of scheme there that had a 4% annual management charge. Like nowadays, that's unheard of. You know, you're talking minimum could be up from 0.4% up to maybe 2%.
That's
a significant saving.
For a company, yeah.
But the saving there is for the employees, because they're getting more. Their fund has grown more because of that charge.
So the charge would have been
yeah.
coming out of the employees.
Yeah. So you
portion,
think about
yeah.
if a fund is returning, say, 5% per year and the annual management charge is 4%, they've made a net gain of
yeah.
1%, you know. So that's it all feeds into the performance, I suppose, of the fund over the long term. It's
yes.
important to have those charges at an appropriate level.
Just to summarise,
yeah.
it is very important for companies to go consider putting in business protections
yeah.
and employee benefits, and the way to do that is to sit down with a financial advisor
yeah.
or broker
yeah.
and they may have one already, or maybe they have one that hasn't been in touch with them for many years.
Yeah.
And in that context, you'd be very happy to meet with them.
I'd be delighted to meet with anybody and look at their what they have in place at the moment. Second opinion even, just to say, well, look, people can get comfortable, I suppose, with their existing broker or advisor. You don't fully understand what they have with them, or you know, and it's important just maybe for a second set of eyes thrown over it and to be able to provide
So charges,
a review, I suppose,
charges and benefits that are in the scheme could potentially be improved upon.
Improved, for the employees and the employer,
Okay, so to get in touch with yourself, John, then, if they wanted to sit down and have a coffee and a chat and look at options.
They can call me on 083-099-5086, or they can email me at john.miller@lucancu.ie or on the website, www.lucancu.ie, under the financial services tab.
There is a business protection
gives a
page
bit of information
there, and there's also a contact form.
Oh yeah,
that
the contact
they can complete through that if they want you to if they want you to give them a call.
Yeah, I'll be honest.
So it's important as well to mention that it's not just for members of Lucan District Credit Union. Really, anybody can give you a call from anywhere.
Yeah, it's for the members and the wider community, and we don't charge a fee either
to sit down
and have a chat. Yeah. It's a win-win really for both parties in that, and we can only improve what's there if we can, you know.
Okay, well, thank you, John. That was very interesting.
Paula.
This podcast was produced by Lucan District Credit Union. Lucan District Credit Union is regulated by the Central Bank of Ireland.